Oceanographer Sylvia Earle has spent almost a year of her life underwater. That's 7,000 hours. In the 1950s, she was one of the first researchers to use new scuba technology to explore Florida's reefs. And during five subsequent decades of research, she's walked the ocean floor. She's even lived underwater as part of the U.S. government's Tektite 2 mission. All that time underwater has given Dr. Earle a unique perspective on our oceans, and in her new documentary, Mission Blue, she bears witness to troubling changes, from the decimation of coral reefs to the elimination of 90% of large wild fish. But she also has hope that we can turn the tide on ocean ecosystems and protect our seas the same way we protect our valuable land. Sylvia Earle is the founder of the organization Mission Blue. She's also a National Geographic Explorer in Residence, and we're lucky to have her back here in our New York studios. Sylvia, always a pleasure to have you here. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me back on board.
You're welcome. Let's talk about lots to talk about. Let me begin by talking about something that's been in the news. We happen to be at the tail end of Shark Week.
I can hear the music now.
Yes. People are watching a lot of shark TV right now. There's a doubleheader of Sharknado and Sharknado 2 on TV about shark attacks. What's the truth? What do we really need to know about sharks? What's the mythology here?
Well, sharks have much more to fear from us than we do from them. After all, we as predators are far more efficient, effective, and comprehensive than all the sharks put together could possibly imagine. They've been around for more than 300 million years, and we're newcomers, but we've harnessed technology in ways that it shifts the odds very much in favor of us. Mm-hmm. Millions of sharks are eaten by humans. Every once in a while, a shark might take a little bite out of one of us. But given what we're doing to them, I think they're allowed.
Mm-hmm. There's some footage in Mission Blue of shark finning. What's that process for people who haven't seen it? What's going on there?
Shark fin soup is the reason that the fins are removed from sharks, so they can make this basic ingredient of what once was considered a tremendous luxury item, really destined only for the palates of a very small part of the population, mostly in China. Mm-hmm. And later, now the idea has spread not only throughout China, but the world. You can go to almost any big city and go to mostly a Chinese restaurant and have the option of ordering shark fin soup. It's still a luxury, but mm-hmm. now, unlike 1,000 years ago or 500 or even 100 or even 50 years ago, it's so much easier now to find and catch and kill and market sharks. In 1980, the agency that I served as the chief scientist in the early 90s had a policy of actually fostering the connections between sharks taken from U.S. waters and Chinese, or at least Asian markets, mm-hmm. the idea being that they were, quotes, underutilized species. What a concept that any wild thing could be regarded as underutilized, as if their highest and most important reason for being is so that we could turn them into commodities.
Mm-hmm. Talking with Sylvia Earle on Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. I'm Ira Flato. We're talking about her life story and her new documentary, Mission Blue. Speaking of sharks, I heard you quoted as saying, it's man eating shark now rather than man eating shark.
That's right. And I was at one time cautioned to be wary of going into the ocean because of the man eaters. And then I realized I don't have to worry. You do, but I don't. I don't qualify.
Well, tell us about your early life and as an explorer. You were just the lone female among a bunch of marine scientists, weren't you?
Well, my parents, I guess, encouraged me to think that I had an older brother and a younger brother, and I was just part of the pack, I suppose. And I didn't realize that it was considered unusual for girls to do things that my brothers allowed me to, go along with them on adventures. And they also, I think, instilled in me a feeling that if I wanted to do something, well, go ahead and do it. You know, what's stopping you? And so given the freedom to follow my heart, if you will, I loved critters. I still love critters, love science, love wanting to understand the world around me. I mean, kids are start out that way, endlessly asking who, what, why, where, when, how. Scientists never stop asking. They're like, they still are little kids who never quite grew up. And maybe that's not considered to be a good thing, but I think it's a good thing if you keep asking questions, keep that sense of wonder the three-year-old has as they discover earthworms and bugs and butterflies and the world around them.
Mm-hmm. In the film, you talk about a fish. Do you eat fish?
No longer.
None.
I grew up in a family that was certainly, well, omnivorous. And in New Jersey, mm-hmm. as a child, and later in Florida, plenty of locally caught wildlife that appeared on our dining room table. We ate locally and often went out and captured in New Jersey crabs and clams, and the same in Florida. And it things have changed. When I came on board Earth, there were only 2 billion of us. Now there are 7 billion. There were many more creatures on the land and in the sea, in the wild, than there are today. So our prosperity has gone up while their numbers have gone down. And partly because I understand that there are other values for wildlife. I mean, we used to eat a lot of birds. I had an uncle who was a market hunter early in the 20th century, but after a while he had to stop because there weren't that many birds anymore, ducks, geese, and so on. But the same is happening in the ocean. But we're now empowered with technologies that did not exist early in the 20th century or any time in the history of life on Earth.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a break. We're going to talk more with Sylvia Earle about the subject of her new documentary, Mission Blue, and the changes that she has seen in her decades, like the loss of all the big fish. All the big fish are gone, and the fisheries are struggling, and what to do if you want to eat seafood. Is there a safe way or a responsible way to do that? We'll be right back after this break. Stay with us. This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour with oceanographer Sylvia Earle about Mission Blue, a new documentary about her life and fight to protect our oceans. Sylvia, you talked about growing up watching the oceans lose their fish. You talked about the endangered fish that are there, the fish that are gone. Is there any hope? I know you always have hope every time you come on. Share it with us.
Well, as a witness, I've observed the decline of coral reefs. About half are either gone or are in a state of sharp decline. Seagrass meadows also reduced by at least half, and mangroves around the shores. And much that we can't see that's happening in the deep ocean, where access still is fairly limited. What to do? Well, first of all, to recognize that we've got a problem. Mm-hmm. Well, lots of problems. You can't start to solve them unless you know that you're in trouble. Now we do know that the ocean is in trouble. Therefore, so are we. I'm so pleased that Netflix has taken on Mission Blue as one of their documentaries because of its wide reach to alert people to be aware, people who might not otherwise know or care. And why I'm so glad to be on this program with you again, Ira, just to get people to think about it, because being alive on a planet that is alive is a miracle, and we need to respect the fact that we've got a chance to find an enduring place for humankind within the natural systems that make our lives possible. We haven't been paying attention. But finally, you know, we see 400 parts per million of CO2 in the atmosphere, and can, as never before, through the technologies we now have, measure, track, project, and know where we're going if we continue doing what we've been doing, and realize, maybe we need to change our ways, change our diets, and look at the ocean with new eyes. Early in the 20th century, Theodore Roosevelt and others were aware that unless they took action, the land would be essentially homogenized and all the wild places would be somehow gone. So a national park system was developed, and now here we are early in the 21st century, about to celebrate 100 years. 2016 will mark that anniversary. At the same time, we're looking at the ocean and the fact that the United States, along with other nations with a coast, claim the ocean out 200 miles. We've got another country out there, and it's blue. Half of the United States is underwater. I don't mean just financially. I mean the ocean. And we've got a chance, armed with new knowledge, new insight, to say, okay, if we could go back 100 years, knowing what we now know about the importance of watersheds, of the diversity of life, about the life support functions of the land, the living land, now we have a chance with a living ocean to do better. And the vested interests are not as locked in place in the sea, either in exclusive economic zones of countries or in the high seas beyond national jurisdiction. That's half of the world that the United Nations is now beginning to think about governance of our life support system, the high seas, where most of the oxygen is generated. Much of the carbon dioxide is taken up. We couldn't see those things when I was a child, but as a witness, observing two important things. One, learning more about the ocean in a few decades than during all preceding history, at the same time that we've lost more than during all preceding history.
So how do we save the oceans now then? What steps should we be taking?
It starts with protecting your life support system with policies that say, let's stop the killing in critical areas, especially places that are known as breeding areas, feeding areas.
We should make, like we have national parks on
extended
land, we should have them in the ocean.
Well, actually, it's happening. We have a National Marine Sanctuary Program that began in the 1970s, and during the administration of George W. Bush, he established a protected area around the Northwest Hawaiian Islands larger than all the national parks put together. And President Obama is about to do the same thing. He's proposing it. He did at a conference in June, the State Department Conference on the Ocean, that, again, in the Western Pacific, with waters around some of the U.S. holdings there, to extend protection at a level that is well beyond what we now do for the land in this country.
Should people give up eating fish like you? Should they emulate you and give up? Or what about fish farming? You know, we don't shoot buffalo anymore to feed everybody. We create
passenger pigeons.
Well,
they're all gone.
I mean, we created farms. Or is that not a healthy way to look at fishing?
I think there is a place, an important place for smart aquaculture. It took us many thousands of years to come to the point where we have a handful of plants, corn, rice, wheat, soy, that delivers about 80% of the calories that people consume across the board, and 100 or so kinds of the 250,000 kinds of flowering plants that deliver much of the rest. You know, broccoli and peas and tomatoes and all that, and all the fruits. And then there's a part of our diet that is meat, that mostly from creatures that we cultivate. Mm-hmm. And every single one of them is a plant eater. Cows, chickens, pigs, you know, the birds, the turkeys, the ducks, the geese, they're not natural meat eaters, although perversely, much of what we take from the ocean goes ground up and gets fed to chickens and pigs and cows. I think they'd rather not if they had a choice. And the only reason I think that it's done in the first place is because we regard fish as free goods.
Right.
It costs something to go out and get them. But we need to account differently for fish, especially wildlife, and all the other wild creatures that we take to market. They're not free. We all pay the cost. And so, actually, there's some interesting choices among fish that are being cultivated, and they all eat plants. Catfish, tilapia is a major source of fish protein and oils, and in Asian countries in particular, variations on the theme of carp. The conversion of sunlight's energy to plants to a carp or a catfish or a tilapia is pretty close to what we enjoy for chickens. You take them to market when they're young. They taste pretty good. They don't mind crowding. They're good candidates for cultivation. Mm-hmm. When you look at the wild things that we're taking, they're not particularly good candidates, by and large, for cultivation. First of all, most of them are carnivores. Think of it. Salmon eat fish. It doesn't make for a good business model to take a lot of wild fish to get a few farm fish.
So you're saying if you have a choice between salmon and tilapia, go with the tilapia?
Yes. If you want to eat fish, it's a much better choice. And the cost of any carnivore is significantly higher than any plant eater, especially if you are taking the plant eater when it's young. We don't raise 10-year-old cows. But we shouldn't. The 10-year-old catfish would be a bad deal, too. But a young cultivated catfish. But think about the wild fish. It takes 10 to 14 years for a bluefin tuna to mature. Mm-hmm. Well, and maybe 20 or 30 years old.
Yeah. In a couple of minutes we have left, your film Mission Blue is on Netflix. What is the central message, the take-home message that people who are watching that film, you'd like them to take home?
People should know that their lives depend on the existence of the ocean. The most important thing we take from the ocean is not just our livelihoods, our life. And they should know that the ocean is in trouble, and therefore we're in trouble. Mm-hmm. But the things that we can do, better choices about what we consume, better choices about what we do to the coastline, support the regulations, the laws, and think internationally about the high seas, and use your voice, as we now can, as never before, to let it be known that you care about the ocean. Support President Obama's plan to expand areas that are protected in the ocean. And around the world, let it be known, and do what you can with your power, whoever you are. Everyone has some power. While you're alive, while you have a chance, make the world a better place.
And now we have more ocean to deal with because the North Pole, right, the whole air, the sea is open during the summer.
Yeah.
And they're going to be struggling over that also.
That's right. There's more blue in the United States now than ever before.
Sylvia, it's always a pleasure to have you here.
Great to be on board. One more quick thing.
Yes.
There's a book National Geographic is publishing in concert with the film called Blue Hope with case histories of places in the sea for protection.
All right. Then we'll look out for that. Sylvia Earle is an oceanographer and founder of the organization Mission Blue. She's also a National Geographic Explorer in Residence. In addition to the book, this is a documentary about her fight to protect our oceans on Netflix, out today, Mission Blue. Always a pleasure, Sylvia. Thank you for taking time to drop by.
Thanks, Sarah.